Order. Let the record reflect, the time is 11:12 a.m. Today is Tuesday, March 14th, 2006. Committee members present are Representatives Lynn, Wilson, Gatto, and myself, Chair Newman. Today we're going to be taking up the following legislation, HB 247, which is an act establishing a grant program to support voluntary class size reduction by Representative Croft. It is my intent today to hold the bill. We're going to be hearing another bill by Representative Holm that deals with the same topic, and maybe we can include topics from both discussions. I have gone over this with Representative Croft to make sure that he's fully aware of what's going on today, and been a real good guy to work with on this bill. Representative Croft, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to see you. No TV cameras today. We'll carry on without.
We'll be out of here shortly.
Yeah, I guess. Well, then never mind.
We do need to be out of here by noon.
Yeah. That just gives us the opportunity to do good real speech. Work instead of playing to the cameras. I appreciate Chairman Newman, members of the committee, you taking the time today. I think it's an absolutely vital subject. We know that public education is one of the most important things that state government does and that we do down here in terms of trying to find solutions for it and appropriate funding. And we've come to learn over studies over the last 20 years that one of the most important things you can do for public education is allow teachers time to teach. That is, give them a small enough class size where they have the time to do what they love, what they signed up into the profession for, is to actually have the time to spend one-on-one with a student to teach them. I want to go over some of the data that confirms what we all, I think, instinctively know, that if you have a class size of 30, it's really very difficult to effectively teach. And reductions to a class size of about 18 to 15, and particularly at the 15 level, you start to get dramatic results in terms of student achievement. 15 in a class. Representative Newman came to see me beforehand so we could talk an hour or two ago about this, and I knew one of the issues he wanted to talk about was the fiscal note, because normally in this place a fiscal note of $120 million would be the death of it, and I think he was very courteously trying to warn me. I stopped him at the beginning and said, Mark, I want to apologize for that fiscal note of $120 million. I know that our schools need more help than that, and I'm working hard to bring it up higher. Because to me, I'm not embarrassed of saying, with the amount we expect of our schools, I want to get significant new resources in. I want to challenge them to do more, give them the adequate fiscal resources to do it, and then hold them to that. But we're talking already this year about a $90 million increase just to keep up and barely keep up, I believe, with inflation, the cost of pursters, the cost of fuel. I'm not embarrassed in the least about presenting a bill to you that asks for a $120, and it may even be higher, million dollars to make one of the most significant steps you can take in a child's life, and that has been proven over and over by studies, as well as I said, our own intuitive understanding of what makes for good education. Very briefly, and I'll come back to it, this is not your typical run-of-the-mill class size bill, and I think it is not an unfunded mandate. Many states have had a bad experience with simply passing a law that says class size shall be 18 and adjourning and thinking they've done something good for schools. Without any funding, without a mechanism to achieve that, you've done very little at all. Representative Lynn, who's more of a student of history than I, there's some king that tried to just stop the tide by ordering it. It didn't work. And it doesn't work for us to simply say, you shall have class size of a certain category if we don't provide them the tools to do that. So I want to get to, and I want as much time today for discussion. Again, I want this to be a slightly different hearing in that sometimes we're trying to get it through the committee as fast as possible. We don't want any questions. We just want our bill moved along. I want every question you're thinking of now and ones you haven't thought of to be asked. Don't worry about probably won't, Representative Wilson, worry about embarrassing me up here or asking the tough question. I want this hearing to be about how we do something about class size and whether the approach I've put forward is the right one. And if it's not, we'll try some other approach. I know there's on Thursday, Representative Holmes' bill, that's fine, or some combination of the two. But I want to just, with the time I have today, talk to you about why class size is so important, why it's the area of public education that I've chosen to focus on, and then some of the ways that this is a very different class size bill from the ones that other states have tried, that I've learned from the lessons of other states, and I'm trying to present to you a different class size approach. So if we could have this slide. There's been numerous attempts at class size reduction, but even better, there's been numerous studies of the effects of class size reduction. By far the most rigorous, extensive, and productive for our discussion here today is the Tennessee STAR study. And it put not just an experiment in class size, but the controls needed to tell whether these work or not. So they categorized over 6,000 students in Tennessee into three different, put them in three different classes. A class size reduction, significant class size reduction, to 17 or 18. A normal class size, and then normal class size with the teacher aid. Because often in this discussion, districts will come back and say, it's not just class size. If you put an aid in a class of 24, that works just as well. And so Tennessee wanted to find out whether that was true.
And Representative Croft, just so we can open this up as a good discussion, and I really like the point that you made as far as the discussion, and I'm going to ask the committee members here to, if you have a question during Representative Croft's discussion, just ask it. That way, I think it'll be part of the conversation. Also, for the record, we have been joined by Representative Thomas. Eric, a question that I had is, you mentioned Tennessee. Do you know what the cost per student for education in Tennessee is?
No, I imagine it's significant. I don't know, and I can get that for you.
I was just trying to compare cost. You know, Tennessee was able to implement this, but how much do they spend per student as compared to what Alaska spends per student?
Right. And Tennessee implemented it as a study, and we're trying to find out. I don't think they followed it on. They did a study, and they found out that there were significant improvements. And that study's been used over and over as proof of that. The cost to fully implement this may have scared Tennessee off. I don't know that they fully implemented. I know that they did the definitive study on it. And that's in Florida. They did a class size reduction and have had a whole big special session and struggle over how to fund it. It's a significant. Let's go in two steps if we can, Mr. Chairman. Let's prove to ourselves here that it has significant results. And then let's talk about whether we're willing to spend the money to achieve those results. But I think the initial question is, does it do what we hope it would? Does reducing class size have an effect on student learning?
If I may, it seems to me like we're going to a lot of trouble to prove the obvious. The smaller the class size, the better, I would suppose. We go right down to do one-on-one private tutors would probably be ideal if you had the right student and the right tutor. And talk about history, you know, first class I ever taught, elementary school class, I was going to say at Stanford, but it was the elementary school, not the university. I had 43 in the class and no teacher's assistant, no teacher aide. We didn't have those in those days.
They hadn't been invented yet.
They hadn't been. We're still working on inventing dirt. After dirt, you know, then came teachers' aides and so on. And a lot of it is not only the class size, but it's the composition of the class.
Right.
Frankly, I'd rather have 30 or 40 quote good students than 10 juvenile delinquents. There are a lot of questions going on other than just plain class size.
Right.
I'm thinking of some things that could come up with something like this that it's going to be perhaps a nightmare for schools. I mean, of course they would like that, but you're going to have classes that have 20 kids or 30 kids, and now they can only have 15. Well, if they have 20, so they've got five extra. So what do they do with that five extra in this class? Then they're going to have combination classes. They're going to have, instead of having two third grades and two fourth grades, they're going to have three, and one of those will be a combination of third and fourth. And then how, I mean, I don't know. I'm just knowing that there's going to be problems because there may, and even for parents, they may say, well, I don't want my third year or third graders in with the fourth graders. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios that I can see that is coming up. And so because there's going to be odd numbers of kids that if you can't have 15, only 15, then where are you going to put these kids? So there's going to be, is there enough rooms in the school now that we have to expand? I mean,
Whoa, okay.
and just for the
you
record.
If you have the size of class, you can have double the number of classrooms.
Okay, just for the record, Representative Guerra is also here. And again, you know, I'd ask the committee members to go ahead and feel free to just have a good discussion on this, but let's also recognize the fact that we have a clerk who needs to try and keep people's names straight here. And, you know, and not feel obligated. We're going to relax the committee rules a little bit somewhat today so we can have a good discussion on this. But let's try and make sure we got to be out here by noon and keep our questions short and sweet, Representative Cross.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, it's in the category of careful what you asked for. I asked for you guys to fire away, and you did. Representative Lynn talked about proving the obvious. Yes, we know that reducing class size should have an effect on student learning. We don't know how big an effect, and we don't know whether it's worth it to spend our money on it. And so that's what I want to very briefly use these three slides to prove. And then I will get to Representative Wilson's question because it's an excellent one. Once you decide that class size is important, how you do it is tremendously important. How you do it so districts have the maximum flexibility, where you're not mandating that from Juneau a one-size-fits-all for Anchorage, for the Mat-Su, for Wrangell, and for Kluwak. You know, they're going to have different solutions to this. In each, the truth that giving a qualified teacher the time to teach students is still true, but they're going to implement it in very different ways. And so my challenge, and the one that I hope to have met in this bill, is to write a bill that gives the maximum flexibility and incentive for districts to do this without mandating exactly how they do it here in this room. So let me get to just the proof of what Representative Lynn asked, and then we can get to some of the details of the bill that respond to some of the flexibility concerns that you rightly raise, Representative Wilson. Okay, this is from, as I said, the best study that we have on this, the long-term 6,000 student with control group Tennessee study. They found some dramatic results for lowering class size to the 15 to 18 range. Other studies have said that if you lower it solely into the low 20s or even 20, you don't get very much of a result. It's really, there's a magic sort of sweet spot around the 15 to 18 where you dramatically reduce the disruptive influence of that group in the back talking instead of listening. You dramatically increase the time with the teacher. You shorten the feedback loop, and it took me a while to get this idea, but one of the reasons it works is the time from when a student says an answer to when they're either rewarded, praised for what they've done, yes, that's correct, and they get confirmation of that, or corrected, and they get the correction in their head. It's vital to have that be a fairly quick turnaround. The more they sit with the wrong answer or a right answer they don't know is right, the less they're learning. And what you find, and the reason most experts in this believe that it has such dramatic effects is you start to get a very quick time from when somebody studs the answer to when you're able to say, yes, that's the right answer, or no, here's what you need to do. So the feedback is much quicker, the distractive influences are much less, the interaction with the teacher is much more. And you can see the easiest ones for me to understand are the SAT grade equivalents over there. They do it in various ways on SAT tests, on others, but these are in terms of student months. That is, in kindergarten for a small class size, in reading and word skills, and that's over on the right there, students who were in a small class size as compared to the regular class size were half a month ahead in those reading and word skills and over 1.5 months ahead at the end of that year in mathematics. That's significant, but fairly modest gains compared to what you get in grades 1, 2, and 3, up to, as you can see at the bottom, a third grader being almost half a year ahead from simply having 1 year of a small class size compared to, and they had very good study groups, and as I said, a 6,000 sample, 4.5 months ahead of people that were in a class size of 25 in reading, 5.5 months ahead in word skills. And you can see over there in mathematics that the biggest gains were in the second grade, but there were significant all the way through in the 3 months ahead or a full sort of a quarter year ahead of the students who didn't have this advantage. That's for having 1 year of that. So just putting a third grader in a small class size can have this dramatic impact on their reading and word skills. But when you're able to do it each of the years, K through 3, it's even a more dramatic emphasis. So that's that next slide. We're just learning how to be. I'm not learning at all, and she's just learning how to be, how to do this.
And then this information is in our packet.
It's in your packet, and I just wanted to cull out these three areas. Some of the reading in the packet is rather dense, and I couldn't understand it all. Retrogression analysis on the mathematics. These graphs show, and it's in the packet on page 155, in case that's a little hard to read all the way up there, of that 155 of that big study. But so we know that from the prior table that a first grader, even take a second grader, who has 1 year of this reduction in class size got a gain of about 4 months. But a second grader who had been through a reduced kindergarten and reduced first grade class, that is, they had the benefit of this 15 to 18 small class size all the way through, and now they're in the second grade, the gains go up to about 5.8, or essentially half a year ahead of the regular
students. Representative Towns?
Yep. Thank you, Representative Croft. What does it show for homeschool students versus one where it's been one-on-one versus a classroom of 30 or 25? Is there anything in here? Because I haven't read this backup at all.
You haven't read all the studies, President?
No. And it would be interesting because we do have so many homeschool correspondence classes and children in Alaska to see how they compare with their SAT at the end of the year.
Yeah. It's an excellent point. I flew up. It was me, Representative Crawford, and then the superintendent of the Delta Greeley School. And we had a long discussion about homeschooling. I'll get you some information on it. It's very difficult because it seems to me there's it was his opinion, and I think it's true, a wide variety in homeschooling. Those that homeschool and follow a curriculum tend to do very well. And then there's sort of a group of homeschoolers where they're not following it much. And so you see, I think, a wide variety. Homeschooling can be tremendously effective if the parents are truly involved in teaching, and not very effective if they're not doing much.
Kind of just like school.
Well, yeah, probably. But I'll get you some more data if we have it on it.
Representative Thomas.
So a couple other, I admire your fiscal note, but I think it lacks because I think Representative Wilson almost got to it. There's a capital construction requirement. If you drop your classroom size to 15 and you're in a classroom of 30, you're going to have to add more, at least it would seem to me, you'd have to have more classrooms to put the kids in there unless you're going to, you have to move them somewhere, yeah, I would think. And so, I mean, most schools are designed.
People are just exactly. Yeah, we're going to have to get back a little bit. Could you answer that real quick there? And then we have Representative Guerra and Gatto.
Yep, like I said, be careful what you ask for. You'll get the questions. It's one of the reasons, and we'll get to it very shortly. I guess we're almost the committee's willing to accept that there are dramatic increases from doing this?
I think we're willing to accept
all right.
that kids do better in smaller classes.
Yeah, okay, good.
Like I said.
Well, then let me finish that thought, and we'll go right on to how we do it right. So there's the cumulative impact, and you can see not only do they do better, when you can stack the effect, it gets dramatic. And then that last slide, because the committee has got the proof they need. But in addition, it's not just in that year. That is, they tested those students who were in small class sizes early on, and then they tested them later at 4th grade, 8th grade, and 4th, 6th, and 8th. So the question became, okay, so they do better then, but does it fade away? And the short answer is no. That even when put back into a 4th grade class that is of a regular size, the students that had K through 3 small class size do significantly better later. So it doesn't just help them at that time. It helps them all the way through their scholastic career that they had that foundation. When you give them time to learn, teachers time to teach at the early grade levels, it carries on even if you're not able to have reduction in class size in 4th or 6th or 8th grade.
Representative okay. Garrett, did you have a question?
Sure. Just one comment, one question. The question first. Yeah. I think this is a great bill, and as it moves through the committee process, and I want to see if we can work on it, if there are any shortcomings, and I don't see any great ones. The 15 or smaller class size, is there a way to save money that we can limit that to core classes, or is there a reason to limit that to core classes so we can keep the fiscal note down? Is there such a thing as a core class in K through 3?
Okay.
Maybe just field trips can be larger?
Limit the core, and then also the other limits that sometimes have been done in some states are limits to only some of the poorer schools. And you and I have discussed that a little. Title I schools are eligible if a certain percentage are eligible for student loans, so poor schools. Okay, so now we've proven that it works. Let's talk about some of the ways that it's been done wrong and what I tried to do here to address some of the concerns the committee's brought up. Some states have done this by a straight mandate. So they've just, as we talked about at the beginning, Georgia was an example of that. They mandated it everywhere and then realized they couldn't pay for it everywhere. This is not a mandate. It's a voluntary grant program. No school district in this state has to reduce their class size if they don't want to. I want to make it, and I'd put it before the committee that it's the right approach. You make it worth their while by saying, if you will do this, we will give you some financial help to do it. If you decide not to, don't.
And I'm just going to ask, go a little bit out of bounds here.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine why any school district in the state would not say, you bet I'll take that money. And I'm going to ask Carol Como, just in the audience here real quick. would you, I'm certainly your school district would take advantage of every bit of this if they could, wouldn't they? And just for the record,
okay. We're going free form here, Mr. Well,
we wanted an open discussion on this, that's what you and I talked about earlier, and that's what we want to do.
I'm fine. Sorry.
Thank you. Basically, our biggest concern.
Carol Como.
Carol Como, Superintendent Anchorage. The facility issues is real. There's no doubt in my mind that school districts would take advantage of this if they could be assured of high-quality teachers, which didn't happen in California and Florida, and we certainly talked about that. And the facility issue is real. I think the other thing that always is a concern when you say you're going to stick to 15 and the 16th student walks in the door, what are you going to do? I mean, and that's a real question. I think it goes to what Representative Wilson asked. I think the five-year study is a good commitment. I think that's real important. I got a little nervous when I read the bill about the parent or somebody could go to court to compel a district to honor their commitment. I'm not sure I know what that all is about. But I really do worry about a very mobile, transient district like ours. If the 16th or even the 17th student came in, what does the district do if they've committed to this 15-to-1 class size issue. I'm not so worried if it goes down to 12 kids. Obviously, it's silent there, but I do worry about what happens on the other end.
Representative Gatto first here, and then Tom.
With regard to building new space, you may not actually need to. We have a room with 30 kids here. It's big enough for 30 kids. You put a curtain down the middle and make two rooms. What you have to hire is a teacher and a desk and something else, if you had the curtain, and if not, your construction costs might be the curtain. But that's only an aside. We already have smaller size classes in the bush. We should then expect that they're exceeding the class size, the larger class sizes from the urban areas. Pardon me? Well, they exist. They don't exist in the classes of 15, I don't know, exist in the urban areas.
Well,
I haven't seen any.
Well, in Anchorage, our kindergarten and first and second grade classes, particularly kindergarten one, we've used federal class size reduction funds, about 42 FTE teacher positions, for about the last 6 years, and it's all gone to kindergarten and first grade. So some of our schools have a class size of 15 and 16. It depends on the school, and it depends on the mobility factor, but we staff at 21-to-1, but some of them have gone down, and there's no doubt it's very effective. I would not step back from the intent and the value if you've got a highly qualified teacher who knows how to teach young children appropriately. It's
and
very successful.
I do have to just say, you know, I have to ask Representative Croft, this is your bill, and I certainly welcome you know, as expert as a school superintendent of the largest school district in Alaska, you know, I mean, what she has to say is very important in some of these. So if you don't mind that, joint conversation.
Our
committee can take advantage of that. We have, it was Representative Gatto, Thomas, Wilson, and Guerra.
Thank you. Brings up a good point. If the rural communities are already less than 15, does that mean they get the automatic $8,000? I mean, it seems like that somehow, some way, that could be abused going the other way now, too.
I've been writing them down. Let me do a series of answers if I can. There
got
are
20 minutes. So.
Oh yeah, 20 minutes. I have all those questions. I wrote down all the ones I could think of. There are to Representative Gatto and Representative Thomas. There are some rural schools that already have low class size. What they often have is, because it's a small village, 12 or 14, but they range from kindergarten to a senior in high school. And it seems to me those challenges, I don't know how you get one teacher in there who can teach everything from kindergarten to what a junior or senior in high school needs to do. I know it's a significant challenge. What I've said, I don't discriminate for or against in this bill, urban and rural Alaska. If you've got a kindergartner through third grade student and they are in a small class size and you guarantee me that they will stay in that small class size, then I will give you the boost in education funding. Whether you did it before and are already had to switch around your resources, whether the district has already made the sacrifice to do that and has lost some other place, or whether they haven't quite had the resources yet, we're going to provide you the resources to continue or to start. So I think the bill right now, the answer is yes. If there's districts that are doing it, good for you. I think you've paid the price in some other place, and I want to help you do that. Districts that aren't, I want to help do. Capital construction is significant, but again, who do you want to make those decisions for the districts? From Juneau or individual districts, I anticipate, I hope, that with the way we've structured this, we will have 73 different solutions for the 73 different? 53 different. Well, we may have 73 different. They do. Alaskans sometimes can disagree with themselves. But you'll have as many different solutions to this as you will districts. Wrangell may be fine on space, unfortunately, because of some of the loss in jobs. They may have an excess of space. The Matsu Valley is starving for space. There are districts in between. Some may be able to do partitions. Some may be able to do temporary buildings. But I don't. What I don't want to do is mandate that from here. I think the districts can make the decision themselves. Is this enough of an incentive for me to do this? If so, I'm willing to make the commitment, and I will figure out how to make it work on the ground myself, not top-down.
And I will say that we have invited the 53 school districts. again, as most of our education committees, we invite them to the topic matter to listen in and then to contact my office for part of this discussion because this bill is going to be held over. I'll bring those to Representative Croft. We'll be talking about this. And I just think it's a great conversation we got going on here today. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's no doubt that this is a fantastic bill. And if there weren't 72 other problems that the schools are facing right now, and schools are struggling, they need more funding. And so this, I mean, on this by itself is absolutely fantastic. But if the school could apply for this grant and get more money to do this, that sounds wonderful, but then how are they going to meet the increased heating costs, and how are they going to meet the teacher turnover, and how are they going to meet the increased insurance, and how are they going to pay for their PERS and TERS, and they're losing ADM possibly. So local control, if we're going to give more money to schools, I think truly that they would like it to come in a different way. And I know for all my schools, school cost differentials, number one, in my schools. That's the number one thing right now that would help them more than anything else. Now, that might not be true for his district or his district, but my district would say, give me the money in a different way, I'll take it. But this is going to hamstring me because of what else is going on in my district. So that's kind of where I'm
going. And I think that's, I just wanted to chime in a little bit on this is, you know, this last couple of weeks we heard about early education opportunities and the cost of funding for those programs. And I've talked to Eric about this quite extensively. And the fact of how are we going to go about doing this? We know that early education funding also accomplishes the same goals that smaller class sizes at K-3 does. That is teaching kids to learn how to learn. When we get into larger class sizes, through 4 through 12, if those kids had, through the smaller opportunities of smaller class sizes, those students have learned how to learn. Now, do we try and apply that money? Do we go back and look at the aspect of if we have early education opportunities to trying to reach those same goals by teaching kids through 3 through 6-year-olds, I think is a good place to start in Alaska. Teaching those kids to learn how to learn so that when they hit kindergarten, they know their names, they know colors, they know the alphabet, they know how to socialize. These are all very important parts of a well-rounded education. How do we get there? Do we do that through early education? Do we do that through smaller class sizes of, through K through 3? I think that they both try and reach the same goals of teaching kids how to learn. And in many discussions that I've had with literally hundreds of folks all across the state through the 53 school districts, this is a question that keeps coming up, you know, is how, what's the best way to go about doing that? We don't have the resources in the state. We have to realistically look at the fact that we don't have the resources right now. Or the will, a political will to do that because of all the other obligations the state faces to try and fund every one of these projects. Representative Wilson brought up some great instances, you know, where we've got our TERS, PERS obligations and more school buildings. We've got past debt bond reimbursement programs, hopefully some more future debt bond reimbursement programs. These all have to be funded. Repairs on schools, you know, Matsu, we've got a new roof that we need up there at Sioux Valley. You know, we funded the school maintenance list. This legislative body, I have to say, has done a great job in doing that. We can't forget all these other areas. You know, we've got so many needs, but where does all this money come from? You know, and that's always going to be a crucial part of every discussion.
I'm about three questions behind, but I'm not going to be able to solve the fiscal situation in, here, but I can address some of the others. You know, Representative Wilson, on her point on we need it in the foundation formula, I've been fighting for increases in the foundation formula for 10 years. And part of the impetus for this is that it seems to me we always phrase it in the wrong way. We come down and instantly translate it into numbers. So we say things around here like The governor has proposed $90 million, which is an increase in the base student allocation from 4,919 to 5,325. However, some people feel that that's insufficient. It will result in $200,000 reductions in CLOAC. And so instead, they've talked about $110 million, which is a base student allocation from 4,919 to 5,485. And everybody at home goes, what? And we've been talking that way for a decade and doing nothing significant about increasing education funding. It has either been held steady and inflation eaten away at it, or occasionally we muster the political will to actually make a bump forward. The people here at this table have cooperated to try and get education funding up. But as a whole, over the last decade, it's sort of barely kept up with inflation. So we've got this system where we're describing it to people incomprehensibly, and we're never getting the political will to make a very large step forward in education funding. We're barely holding our head above water, and sometimes not that. So I think we have to try a new approach to communicating what we'd like to do on public education. And that is, instead of this ADM mumbo-jumbo and numbers that sound big, you say, well, $90 million into schools, that sounds like a lot if I'm at home. And I guess I don't understand why that's insufficient and 110 is the minimum. I know, but it's hard to explain at home. So what I wanted to communicate is something very tangible that every parent could understand. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what you're going to get. Your child is going to be in a school where the class size is no more than 15. Where that teacher isn't just wiping noses and changing shoes, but is going to have time to teach. Every parent can understand that. And you say in the same token, that costs money, you understand, to hire that teacher, to build those facilities. Are you willing to make that commitment with me to that achievable goal? Because we know these kind of results will happen. I believe if you ask Alaskans that question, they'll say yes, and they will not be stalled by the fiscal note. They will understand the benefit it'll have for children, and they will pay the bill for it. But we've been, it's like we've been trying to sell something only with the price tag. We're a vacuum salesman that walks up to the door and says, give me $150. And they say no and slam the door. We forgot to sell the vacuum, you know. We need to say, here is what we will do. If we want to make a giant leap forward in funding, we need to tell them what comes with it. And I believe this is the most tangible, touchable, understandable thing we can say comes with it.
And I just want to comment real quick, and I'm going to ask a real quick question, and then we're going to go to Representative Guerra. But I want to ask Carol Como. Carol, do you feel we've talked about funding on early education, and I know you listened in on some of those discussions. You're very familiar with their qualities. Now we're talking about K-3. Where do we get, do you feel, the best bang for our buck? Where is that dime spent today to save a dollar tomorrow? Where does that get us as far as, you know, just if you could summarize very quickly, I know it's kind of putting you on the spot, but compare those two.
Well, that is a huge question. I believe you can't invest more. I mean, I think you have to invest the most we can do in pre-K through primary grades, third grade, second grade. I just think if we intervene
early.
Well,
you just went from pre-K to third grade. I wouldn't.
Noel, I can't make a distinction. I'm on that statewide task force. I absolutely and passionately believe in pre-K, not as a mandate, but as an opportunity for young kids to get a level playing field before they get to kindergarten.
But if we could only do one.
Pardon me?
If we could only do one.
We can't, but we should invest the best.
Well, I probably would invest it in K through 3 because it's in the system already. Though I do believe we're missing the boat, where kids are not ready to learn when they come in the door at kindergarten. Those kids who come from enriched families that where they've been read to, talked to, so forth, they're ready to learn. Those kids who aren't ready to learn are behind the eight ball, and lower class size will help them immeasurably. There is no question of that, but they would do so much better if they'd had some help before. But I do believe the thing I like about this bill is it leads to the local school district whether to apply, and it allows the local school district then to determine how many schools could do this program. It doesn't say, like they did in California and Florida, every school will do this regardless. And that's what I like about this bill, and that's what I've had numerous conversations with Representative Croft and his staff about, There has to be the local decision whether to apply and the commitment to keep it going. Okay. But I can't make a distinction. There are really that
Representative
Garrett? Important issues there.
She's good, isn't she?
That's why she's at where she's at.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I've got one question for Representative Croft, but I need to address a point that we've made, the people have raised first, because we can address that this year. We've all said, where are we going to get the money for early ed? That's $200 million or $100 million, and small class sizes, and cost differential, which is $100 million, and raising the base student allocation to accommodate that, which is probably another $100 million. We're talking a $500 million bill, and so we're sitting here saying, God, we're paralyzed because we don't have the money to do any of these things. Maybe we'll just do one, or maybe we'll just do half of one. And just very quickly, this year we're going to make a decision on oil taxes. And between what the governor proposed before he filed his bill, a 25% tax rate and a 20% tax rate, that's $700 million that we've taken off the table. So as we discuss this oil tax bill, we're going to answer this question whether or not we have the money to do these things by how we address the oil tax legislation. And it's just been completely clear from every one of the consultants we've hired that you can go to that 25% rate, the extra $700 million, without deterring future investment.
We need to stay on topic on this bill.
It's actually pretty on topic. Where are we going to get the money for this?
We're not discussing oil.
So, PPT.
Right now. So all I would say is if we want to address these things in the future, we're going to have to pay very close attention to what we do in the next few weeks. The question for Representative Croft is, I'm worried about sort of a rope-a-dope, which is, yeah, we'd like to have small class sizes, but this year we're going to build another school, and it's going to be built in a way where we can't accommodate small class sizes. And so every year we delay implementing a small class size rule. We're going to keep building schools that won't accommodate them, and then the school districts will sometimes come in and say, we can't do anything about it. So what would you think about adding a provision to your bill, considering a provision, we had it in an earlier bill that we had filed, that said as you new school construction should also be done in a way that can accommodate small class sizes so that the school we build next year and the year after will be able to start accommodating the stuff. We won't play this rope-a-dope where we keep building schools to put off the day that we can achieve your goal.
Can I answer that now so we don't get a list of questions?
Okay.
I think we absolutely should, and I've talked to Eddie Jeans about it. So it's an amendment to our facility specs on schools that say if a district chooses, they can get funding for asking for a school that accommodates a small class size for these. And then the last one I had on my list was, so we can clean up and go to the next questions, and I think both Representative Wilson and Superintendent Cuomo talked about it. What do you do with that 16th kid? And I've had language in this bill that says, okay, you can have sort of a temporary waiver. So you're sitting at 15, the kid comes in, particularly I think it might be manageable in Anchorage. I know it would be difficult, but she is so good she could do it. But in a single-site school in just a village, you know, you just got one school and the 16th kid comes in. It seems to me that's even more problematic. A family moves in and now you had 14 and there are four kids that just dropped in and now you have 18. I put it back to the committee because I have drafted waiver language before that says, but for a brief period of time you can go over. And I always ended up taking it back out. I want the parents to understand, not sort of with an asterisk, but absolutely, that their child is going to be in a class of no more than 15. And we think we've given enough funding with a 60% increase for each of those students that you could keep the class size at 14 and accommodate that next one, that you could do various things. Again, I want districts to make the individual plans that vary from Kluwak or all the way up to Anchorage on how they're going to accommodate that. I want it to be worth their while. I want them to understand it's a long-term commitment and choose to do it or not do it. But if the committee wishes, they can put some sort of waiver language that says you can keep a 16th kid in for a while. After a while of staring at it, I prefer just having a hard cap, if you will.
I would maybe prefer that you make maybe suggestions to the committee on what you maybe think on it. Representative Thomas, I had a quick question, then I'm going to Representative Thomas.
No, mine's just more of a comment again. It's unless we fix the cost differential, Eric, I have a hard time. And I know Representative Garza said we can fund it with next year's money. Everybody wants to spend next year's money if we even get it. you still got to pass that bill. But I think, you know, prove to us that the rural kids need the education too. And I think they're the ones that have been getting choked in by school sizes and the money not being there. And it's cumulative now. I think it's been 9 years since they promised a study, and I think cumulatively would. I represent 12 school districts out of the 53. Woody, who's not here, represents them and has 13. So we have almost half of them within our own two districts. And we sit on here and we're saying we need cost differential money. We don't even teach foreign languages unless we watch it by satellite. And I watched an article on TV where the kids in Anchorage are getting taught Japanese in the third and fourth grade. Well, give me a break, you know. It's night news. But I'm just saying, unless we fix cost differential, and we can't look at next year's money because that hasn't happened yet. I've been telling the school districts for information to sue the state of Alaska, get your money, because we owe it to them. Senate Bill 36 was wrong. They never lived up to their agreement. I mean, I'm always like to say I'm one of my word. I'm going to give it to you, and we don't. It's pretty sad.
Representative Thomas, I absolutely agree. I was the only legislator from Anchorage or Fairbanks to vote against SB 36. Worried about what would happen when I came home and had to explain that to the Anchorage School District because of those very concerns.
Yeah.
And if I may interject here real quickly, is that's a conversation that I've had with a lot of the smaller school districts from rural Alaska. They're saying, if we're going to be putting $130 million in on this, we're never going to see a piece of that pie because we just don't have those class sizes. Wouldn't we be better off putting that money on a BSA so that we get a piece of that pie too, because they're never going to see a piece of that, because they'll never reach that class.
Who's not going to?
The small schools out in rural Alaska that just don't have 15 kids in a class.
Well, I think the opposite is true. I think there's our information is there are a fair amount of rural schools that are already they've already made the sacrifices to have class size, so they would qualify already. I think that was Representative Gatto's point.
Real quickly, Representative Wilson, and if Hope Louise Carmel is in is she in our audience right now, or is she on Alaska Net? Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Colmo. And then Tom Harvey, I'm just going to take your written testimony, if that would be okay. The committee members have had that, because we have to close out here in 3 minutes. Representative Wilson.
I just want to make the comment that I think that the rural schools have been underfunded for so long that they would dearly love to apply for something like this, but there's no way that they can, because financially they're so far behind that there's too many other places that money has to go, and so they won't be able to do it. And so there again, the unfair funding will continue.
Would you like to respond to that quickly?
Well, maybe we can talk right afterwards since it's the end of the committee. I hope we'll be able to bring it back up and continue the discussion.
Yes, it's been a great discussion. I do have to thank the committee members for this open discussion that we have on this. But, again, things that I want to make note of is the fact that we do have, early education funding versus smaller class sizes versus the cost differential studies versus different delivery systems, which we're going to hear about in April. And where we're going to go about on Alaska. And with that, we are going to close out this meeting. We're going to be holding this bill in. I apologize to the people who didn't get a chance to testify today. We got this oil tax legislation that's kind of thrown a hitch in all of our schedules, but that's life. So I will close this meeting right now. Thank you.